everybody. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. Canada wrapping up its World Cup against Morocco on Thursday. Trying to play spoiler after being officially eliminated yesterday with the 4-1 loss to Croatia. This soccer report is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Let's talk to Andy Petrillo of One Soccer. Andy, thanks for doing this. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing yesterday? Not after 68 seconds. I'm sure you, just like everybody else in this country, was real good. But, I mean, at the end of 90, how are you doing?
Obviously, I'm disappointed. I think like a lot of Canadians, there's a ton of mixed emotions. And, yes, we're going to have conversations of moral victories and we're going to have a sense of pride. And, yeah, I get, you know, cut the guys some slack, first time in 36 years back at the World Cup. But I think we're also just going to have some real conversations, because if we are what, by the way, John Herdman claims, a footballing nation, then I guess we need to start analyzing and dissecting, you know, the sport as one would if it is a top sport in your country, as we would if we were talking hockey, I guess, right? Like, we're going to sit here and look at what went wrong. Like, why are they playing their third game in the group and it doesn't matter to them anymore, right? As in, they're not moving on to the round of 16. What happened? What could be done differently? And, you know, I tweeted out today that time is a very funny thing. Because even though 2026 seems like forever away, I mean, we're all going to blink and suddenly it's 2026. And that's a home World Cup. So, yes, 4 years is a lot of time to work with, but you got to work well with it. And, you know, you don't want to be in the same conversation as Qatar and South Africa as a host nation that doesn't make it out of a group. So mixed emotions, you know, all around. Again, like, there is a lot of happiness and pride of what they were able to do, but at the same time, you're just like, really, this is how it ended? Like, it stinks.
Andy, so we come into this tournament with high hopes, and there is a lot of room for moral victories and things like that. And I do wonder if playing Belgium as well as Canada did in that first match changed the expectation level faster than maybe we had expected coming in. Now, that Belgium game looks a little different after the way Morocco played Belgium and certainly after the way Canada played Croatia. When you look at the total of these two games so far, you mentioned John Herdman saying that this program belongs with or wants to belong with the elite programs. You talk about potentially getting out of the group stage in 2026. I know it's just two games, but has your feel for Canada's proximity to that level changed at all over the last week or two?
I mean, to your point, what a pendulum, right? Because, I mean, yes, you can make the argument that Belgium is not looking like a threat at all, you know, this World Cup, even though they have been perennial contenders, even though they, you know, rightfully have earned world number two. And Canada played them hard. Like, I would not say it was even a moment of brilliance by Belgium to get that goal. I think that was a breakdown by Canada, right? So you look at that and you think, okay, wait a second. They, you know, even though they're older, you know, even though they're fatigued, and Belgium said it themselves, that's still a top team. And Canada performed well against them. But then you look at Croatia, and even though you strike first, you see the quality of a top team. You see emotionally how they stick it out as well. Like, Canada not only looked physically drained, they looked emotionally drained. And I think a lot of that does come with the inexperience. I think sometimes we don't talk enough about the moment that Canada also had to manage. Like, they're at the World Cup. To me, I always liken it as, like, the kid at a birthday party who's really excited and you eat all the pizza and you eat all the candy and then suddenly, like, an hour later you're puking and you have the absolute, like, sugar crash. Like, to me, I don't think we can appreciate enough how emotionally draining it must have been for Canada to also be in that type of environment. And I think you really saw it catch up to them against Croatia, which is just a dynamic team. They are a highly skilled team, and emotionally they have the chops. Like, they didn't panic. It's like, oh, you scored with a minute in. All right. Still a lot of soccer to go. And they proved that and they showed that, right? But I mean, so to answer your question, like, yes, I think Canada has shown that they're there. Obviously, they can hang with the big teams. But now what's next, right? Because bottom line is they're out. There's one more game to go in the group and they're already out. So now what? Now what's next? And you know, you just start to ask the questions of, well, if they're going to continue to say they can hang with those types of teams, then they need to continue playing those types of teams in these 4 years in between. So when I also say there are some tough questions that need to be asked about this team, it's not just on the pitch, it's also off the pitch, right? Like, what can Canada Soccer do to get them the opponents they need to also better prepare themselves and continue to prove that they belong?
I do want to look ahead to Thursday, but now that you talk about the off-the-pitch stuff, there was something I wanted to bring up that we didn't bring up off the top of the show. It was a topic of conversation, mostly amongst media folks, but just about everybody threw it into their story after writing about Sunday's match, that Alphonso Davies has not done international media throughout the entirety of this tournament, and the biggest sporting stars in the world have, like, all done it. And it doesn't mean that we don't hear from Alphonso Davies. Of course, we hear it when he is obliged to speak to the rights holders. Is that something? Is it nothing? Does it make you scratch your head? Like, what do you make of that?
Well, I think no matter, guys, we both know that, or all three of us know that, in the court of public opinion, they're never going to side with the journalists, right? Like,
yes.
They don't care that we didn't get our interview, right? Oh, woe is the media. So it's not a battle we're ever going to win in the court of public opinion. But, you know, I will say this, like, you know, it does go a long way when you are the face of a program, when you are the superstar of the team, to speak to your country. And, you know, in many ways you do that through the media. And a lot of people have traveled there to tell a story, to tell your story, to tell the program's story. And when you don't spare a couple minutes, because, by the way, you just scored a historic goal. Yeah, that stinks. You know, that stinks. I'm not going to put that completely on Alphonso. I mean, the guy's like 22. I feel like a lot of that too are the surrounding camp, whether it's, you know, his own agents, whether it's Canada Soccer. Like, there needs to be a conversation behind the scenes as well. There needs to, you know, also be a plan, you know, within the organization to say, all right, like, if this happens, you have to speak to the media. Like, if this is even a devastating loss, you're the face of the team. You have to speak to the media. If you do something historic, you have to go above and beyond just the rights holders and speak to the media, because this is a moment. And, like, this was a moment that now not a lot of people have a quote, you know, have a quote from Alphonso Davies, right? Like, historic moment, and they didn't speak to him. But a lot of that, too, also has to do with the surrounding camp and just expressing that, you know, this is something that is important. And to your, you know, point, like, you hear about Messi speaking to everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Especially he made a point to speak to everybody from his country. Right. Because whether you're a football nation or not, so let's just say in Canada, I don't think we're completely there yet. So it's still important that the faces of the national team help grow the game. And even if we do end up being this footballing nation that's on par or surpasses hockey, that's always the, you know, example, that's the barometer, then you still should make a point to speak to the media, because you are the face of one of the most popular sports in your country, right? So, and I get it. It's a battle as old as time. There are so many athletes who are just incredible athletes, but believe it or not, just because they perform on a stage in front of hundreds of thousands or millions of people, a lot of them are introverts, right? And they just hate doing media. And I do. I feel for them. I really do, because it can be very intimidating with a camera in your face. I get that. But there are also just some certain obligations to tell the story of your team. And here's just another thing, and I'm not by any means saying that it's at that point at all, so, you know, please don't misunderstand me. But when you also don't want to do media a lot, and it always falls on the shoulders of, like, certain guys on your team, like, at some point those guys are going to get pissed off, are they not? It's like, yo, can you carry some of the weight here for us too, right? So, again, I yes, you look to the player, but I also look at the surrounding staff around him, agents, Canada Soccer, to explain the importance of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there's a responsibility on the team and program side there. I think there's also, you know, there can be an element of, not that Alphonso Davies needs it, but maybe the next person in his shoes that, I don't mean you do media transactionally or expect favorable coverage or whatever, but long-term, the you want people handling your story well, and you want to help them tell your story. It'll benefit you in the long run. You know, that's going to vary person to person, though. So you talked about Alphonso Davies as the face of the franchise, so to speak. Looking ahead a little bit, and maybe this is Thursday, maybe it's 2026. Another player who stands to be maybe one of the faces of the franchise, if things go well developmentally, and the need for that really stood out against Croatia, where the midfield was just so well played. And Atiba Hutchinson, who's done so much for the program, is also 39 years old and not going to be around in 2026. How important is it for this program that Ismail Kone become a 1B or a number two behind Davies in terms of importance to this group?
Well, if you're talking midfield, I would say Stefan Eustachio is so important right now. And I actually think, like, he's that. I wouldn't even say heir apparent. Like, he is the guy of the midfield. I don't even think he's the heir apparent to Atiba. And I think it's just so unfortunate that, you know, he picked up a knock before, you know, the World Cup even began. And it clearly ended up being too much for him in that Croatian game. So that's, like, that's a huge loss for Canada that, you know, Herdman had to take him out at the end of that first half. But, you know, yeah, I mean, the development of Ismail Kone is crucial. I mean, this is a guy who wasn't even a pro a year ago, and he's already shown incredible, you know, leaps and bounds of what he can do. Like, he hasn't even hit his ceiling yet. And, you know, that is somebody that is definitely an eye, you know, you keep your eye on him moving forward. I think he's going to be crucial to that midfield because not only is Atiba getting older, but, you know, there's a lot of guys, you know, Sam Piet, even though he didn't see the pitch. But here's the point, right? Like, where's the depth? Sam Piet didn't see the pitch. Clearly, you know, Herdman lost faith in Marc-Anthony Kay. He put Osorio out there. But, you know, where's Osorio going to be in 4 years as well? So, yes, Ismail Kone is the young guy, the 20-year-old you're watching out for. Stefan Eustachio, someone else who's still young, you know, keep your eye on him. But that's also, again, goes to the questions I have moving forward. If that game against Croatia, if Herdman's looking at his bench and going, I don't have a better option than Atiba, which is why I have to keep in a noticeably fatigued Atiba in the game, then we have to start asking questions about that midfield. And yes, I think it's going to be very important for Ismail Kone to move on, right? Right now he's with CF Montreal, but if this guy can make a move overseas and kind of get like that higher level of competition, he will be crucial in 4 years' time.
Can't wait for it. Can't wait for Thursday still. I mean, despite the fact that Canada's eliminated from the World Cup, I mean, you mentioned it. It's time to kind of transition from it's all gravy, playing with house money, to real questions being asked and the bar being set a little bit higher. In that respect, like, how important is Thursday's match against Morocco?
Yeah, I mean, but having said all that, I mean, I say that too as somebody who's been following this team like religiously for 2 years, which is why sometimes maybe I'm sounding to a lot of people, I might be sounding a little bit more harsh. But I also speak as someone who has talked to just about every single player on that team. And I also speak from a place of confidence when I say moral victories will not be enough for them. Now, as a nation, let's enjoy the, you know, what the good times they've given us for sure. And go out with a bang. There is still something to play for on Thursday. Yes, you know, we love to use the term spoiler. They can ruin the party for Morocco, who's, you know, not necessarily guaranteed moving forward. But from a program perspective, wouldn't it be nice to get your first draw? Wouldn't it be nice to get your first win at a World Cup and not have that hang over your head going into a home World Cup for 2026? Because you know that's going to be the topic of conversation. Got your first goal, but you didn't get your first result yet. So you know there's still going to be a lot to play for from a program perspective and achieving another historic result. And also, you know, be professional. Because you can't just go out there and be like, ah, final game, we're just going to throw out whoever we're going to throw out there. Because then Belgium, who's playing Croatia, you know, is going to turn around and go, excuse me, you better give it your all against Morocco here. Or you're going to hoop us. Like, what's going on, right? So, I mean, it matters. That game matters. Not to move on, of course not, but there's still a lot that matters. And it's one more time to cheer on the guys who you're not going to see for a while now. You know, yes, there's a Gold Cup that's coming up next summer. That's going to be the next big competition, but you're not going to see them for a while now. So, you know, show them love. Show them that you appreciate everything that they've done so far.
We'll always have 68 seconds in. On Sunday against Croatia, because at that point they had played a full 90 on par, if not better than Belgium, and then looked like they might steal at least a point, if not three, against Croatia, and then the roof caved in. Oh, well. Andy, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this.
All right, thanks for having me.
Andy Petrillo, One Soccer host. So I mentioned the Alphonso Davies thing. Here's where I come down on that. And again, if you haven't been paying attention, it has been kind of inserted as like a one-line graph into just about every story about that game on Sunday, that he didn't do any international media. He didn't talk to any of the people that spend tens of thousands of dollars to fly down to Qatar, or the organizations that flew them down to Qatar to cover Canada's return to the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. He didn't talk to anybody unless you were part of the rights holder broadcast group. And so he did that on the pitch, but that was it. Nothing else. Everybody else at the World Cup, including Leo Messi, including Cristiano Ronaldo, the biggest sports stars in the world, did media. Nobody cares. I'm not going to tell you should care. I really don't think you should care, because you heard from him. And like Andy said, he doesn't do a lot of media in general, right? Like, he's a really hard guy to lock down. That's why when Christian Jack gets him for like a one-on-one, it's like, holy cow, it's like kind of mind-blowing. You know, often we tried to get him at this radio station to just do a 5-10 minute interview. It's very difficult. Doesn't want to do it. And that's his want. I don't think we should necessarily care. What it does, though, make me think is that, and it's been well documented, the friction, I would say, between his camp and Soccer Canada as far as how the money would be distributed in regards to selling his number 19 kit. And they finally figured that out. And, you know, he's been part of the vocal leadership about, hey, you kind of screwed us on all the media rights deals that you did here. That I don't think he's getting much pushback if his camp says to Soccer Canada, hey, we don't want to do media. I guarantee you nobody's saying, you know, you should probably do that. So we heard from him. It was a historic moment. His play on the field is what does most of the talking. I think it's an interesting story, because despite the fact that it's mostly media people talking about it, I think people who aren't in media are kind of interested in that side of it. But beyond that, as like kind of a curiosity, I don't think there's any impact at all.
I don't know that there's no impact. And obviously I'm coming at this from the perspective of I've been that type of media for years.
Yeah, you would you'd be mad. No, doubt.
I wouldn't be mad. I understand these things. Like I as a reporter on the whims of Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Like, some days you got him, some days you got him, he was awesome. Some days you got him only because he wanted to make fun of Michael Grange or me that day or whatever. Some days you didn't get him at all. So that there's obviously an understanding of that, and that's more of a day-to-day thing. Look, I think if Alphonso Davies doesn't want to do those things and only wants to do what's required contractually, that's totally fine, and him and his camp are within their rights to do that. I think, though, that he runs a small risk of leaving something on the table with that. And I look at, not necessarily that, again, he doesn't need it. He plays for Bayern. He's the face of the program. He doesn't need it. But there is a small element of having your voice involved in the story, because reporter X, Blake Murphy, is going to write about that game and that moment and that goal no matter what. And you can write that with his voice in it or without his voice in it. My goal would always be that story should be as truthful and genuine and authentic as possible, regardless of if he wants to be a part of it or not, because that's his choice and that shouldn't affect your story. But if he wants to control what that story sounds like, if he wants his voice to be a part of it, I think that's a real thing. I also think that longer term, there is, yes, you're the face of the franchise, and there's an element of responsibility that comes with that, that it's not mandatory, but you can choose to take up that mantle. You know, I think of someone like Fred VanVleet, who's grown into kind of the voice of the Raptors. And Andy mentioned, hey, the other guys always have to do the media if you don't. You know, that's kind of the Atiba thing, right? Of we know Atiba really well at this point.
Yeah.
We talk to him all the time as far as Canada soccer goes. So there's an element of that. And then the last thing is just something you mentioned off to the side there, which is he is having an impact and a real voice in things like how Canada Soccer treats its players and how Canada Soccer operates as a business that we are pushing, and players are certainly pushing, to be more equitable across organization and player. Having those media opportunities, and I'm not saying he's going to get asked about the goal and he's going to be like, yeah, by the way, you know, I think I should get X percentage of any of those photos that are sold. I don't think it's obviously not that direct.
If he was going to say that, I'm glad he didn't speak.
No, but if you, like, there is power in having that voice and using those opportunities. And I mean this in a couple different ways. One is just, you know, if you are established as the voice of the program, what you say carries a lot of weight. And some, you know, you joked before that no one's going to take the side of media. You know, sometimes people don't do a good job of taking the side of athletes against organizations either. And there's an affect element to that. But I also think of, you know, the next time Alphonso Davies or the players are trying to, you know, argue for those causes or whatever, he just ticked off a bunch of media members who might not be as eager. And I'm not saying that's right. And again, I go back to the authenticity element, but you know what media members are like. Maybe they're not as willing to take up the cause in the future. So I think, no, he doesn't.
I think that if Alphonso Davies wants to come to somebody with his story about how the Canadian men's soccer players are getting screwed, sure, that somebody's picking up the phone.
If he wants to come to them with the story,
yeah.
If it's just out there and sports writers are writing about it from a quote-unquote unbiased perspective, I think there is a relationship management aspect to that as well. And I'm not saying that that's fair or the way that it should operate, but I'm being realistic about having been in those rooms and the way that people who play ball, when but they that, maybe that, don't
that's
want to.
The, that's the cynical viewpoint, though, right? That's the viewpoint of having been in it for a long time. I'm not saying I do this,
but I have witnessed it happen.
100%. And I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying that if you're just a sports fan and you hear that, you're like, well, that's stupid. Like, why should you do that?
I don't think any sports fan should really care about this. I'm saying you laid it out as from Davey's perspective, and I'm just saying there are these small, tiny incremental things
100%.
That having a positive relationship with the media at large in your home country could have in the long run. It's not necessary. It's not part of the deal of being a very, very good soccer player. I just think it's worth saying that there are tiny little slivers.
No, you speak from a different perspective than me, somebody who's been involved in, trying to get quotes for stories where I've done, limited reporting, but that's your background. I understand that. And that's all well and good. Like, I would prefer that Alphonso Davies spoke to the media. There's just no question about it. It should also be noted that soccer media culture is a little bit different because you cannot go into the locker room after any of these games, like in any of the leagues outside of MLS is like the only one, right? Yeah. And it's a huge culture shock thing for the guys that come from Europe because that's not normal. In Premier League, doesn't matter if you're the Chelsea beat writer. You never get to go into the Chelsea locker room.
It's all mixed zone.
Yeah.
And then the pressers podium. With the, yeah.
Yeah, you wait, you put in your request, and then they tell you what you can get. So, and that's what Alphonso Davies knows since, leaving the Vancouver Whitecaps. That's been his professional life is having Bayern Munich manage his media. He's a guy that doesn't like to do media. So guess what? He's a guy that doesn't have to do media.
Yeah, and if I were a superstar, I would probably use that leeway.
Not me, I'm a loudmouth.
As well. If Austin Mackey back there is calling me up like, hey, Blake, I want you to do fan drive time. You just scored the biggest goal in Canadian men's soccer history. I'd probably say, no, thank you. Are you a rights holder? Is it my contract?
Right.
No. Who is this?
Yeah.
But no, I just think, there are little elements where having a productive and kind of proactive relationship with the media can be helpful. It's absolutely not necessary. And like Alphonso Davies not talking to the press corps I would have forgotten about it already had you not brought it up.
Yeah, it is. There is something funny, though, about all these people traveling halfway across the globe. And there's a big story and it's John Herdman. And it's the Canadian national team. But it's also like one of the best players in the world plays for Canada. And you can't talk to him. For the 2 weeks they're playing in the tournament.
Look, what I really want to happen Thursday is I want him to watch like a best of Kyle Lowry, and I want him to do media after Thursday's game and just run through the like, nah, Blake, nah, not, nah, Bruce.
Yeah.
And just, go through that. I don't actually want that. It would be great if he speaks. Let me ask you one thing on Thursday before.
Yeah,
we have some big Raptors updates to get to before the game in a little bit here. Thursday's game. We talked so much leading into this tournament that it was a bit of a loser's mentality and a bit too long-sighted if you went in this tournament thinking, well, we got to get the guys reps for 2026. This is about building for the future. Now it's done.
Yep.
You are heading into a game where, yes, you absolutely, you want to win. You want that first win under your belt. You could play spoiler. You want to play well anyway. If you're John Herdman, are you shifting a little bit more toward a couple young guys, whether it's Kone gets the full 90 or, you know, I would say, yeah, I'd pick a couple other names, but guys are banged up right now anyway. You don't even know who's fully available.
Well, Yusakeo is probably not going to play.
I can't imagine he plays given, and even like Davies would be a question mark maybe given he had the hamstring thing. I think on top of what we just talked about in the penalty kick, he'll probably also want to play.
Yeah, I know he's playing, and I think.
But like, I do wonder if Kone gets the full 90, if they make some changes on the back end.
Oh yeah, I think you still play to win the game, and yeah, Belgium's freaking out if you just take a dive in that match. Obviously,
no, but they talk so much about the program's depth, and Andy laid out like, hey, it's a concern that you couldn't lean on that depth in the last game. We saw in the Belgium game they used all five substitutions, so. Mm-hmm. There are ostensibly 15 guys outside of Boyan that John Herdman trusts in some situation. Like, that Belgium game was still drawable, if not winnable. So, I don't know. I just wonder if some of those guys get a longer look.
I think, yeah, Kone probably plays a little bit more, but that's secondary. Like, I think it's you want to get a look at the 20-year-old. He's also maybe your best option to win a soccer game.
Well, if Eustachio and Hutchison have two good legs between them.
Yeah, exactly. And also, there's a secondary element to this, is that it's happening in real time, and no, there will not be like super harsh questions about this team coming out of this thing, but we didn't get into it too much, but there was some real discord about some of the John Herdman tactical decisions in that game yesterday, specifically that Hutchison played as many minutes as he did, that they played the formation that they did, that they kind of laid, they took their foot off the gas, and Milan Borjan basically outlined that it looked like a different style of team after like the 20th minute of that soccer game. If you go out on Thursday and get waxed again by what might be the second best, if not best team in this group, and Belgium looks crappy, and that was the one game that you lost but were competitive in, yeah, it's a bit of a different conversation.
Yeah, and I don't think you empty the bench, so to speak, and go with all your depth guys for all 90 or anything like that. I think you want that win. Like, I think it will be still, despite not moving on and how disappointing the last 88 minutes of Sunday were, it's still a big step if this program comes away with a win in a World Cup game. And Morocco just beat Belgium.
Yep.
And drew Croatia. Like, beating Morocco.
It's like wrestling then, right? So the belt, who has the belt right now? It's probably Morocco has it. You can take the belt away from them.
Oh, you're going linear champion. I was thinking more that if you knock down your opponent and you beat, like, if you talk bad about your opponent and you beat that opponent, it doesn't make you look good. You beat a bad opponent. You beat a jabroni. If you build up an opponent as a big threat and then you beat them, you just took out someone really. So Morocco has just been building themselves up
for
Canada to feel good about this win. Not the way I'd have drawn it up, but if you want to, you know, there's still a scenario where you take a game off of Morocco's side that beat Belgium and drew Croatia, and, you know, then the whole of everything doesn't look all that bad.
Yeah, and again, you play it out in reverse. Like, you start, if you win on Thursday,
you beat Morocco, you get hammered by Croatia, and then you play Belgium close. Like, it would look a different way for sure.
No doubt. Anyways, we'll see. This soccer report was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. As Blake alluded to, some major, major news coming out of Raptors camp before
and good their news game for a change
tonight against the Cavs. So we'll get to that next. The Fan Drive Time continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, it's a rematch of opening day when Donovan Mitchell got his, but the Raptors beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. The return affair tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 7:30.
What a matchup.
Yeah.
Although.
What?
Well, the Cavs. So I don't know if people realize this, but the Raptors-Cavs pseudo rivalry from 2016 to 2018, where the Raptors considered that their rival, and LeBron said things like, 2-2 series isn't adversity. And then the Cavs swept them twice after that, mm-hmm. With LeBron spinning a ball and drinking beer and wine and stuff like that. Cavs and Raptors Twitter still have a bit of that. And it was reignited a little bit last year with the Barnes Mobley discussion and those two being 1A, 1B in the rookie of the year race. There's also, I found out today, you know how anytime the Raptors are going to play the Miami Heat, every Raptors fan is just like, oh God, I don't care what the result is. Just get out of there healthy because something bad always happens against the Miami Heat. The Toronto Raptors are that for the Cavs. The Cavs are very worried about their guys getting hurt all the time against the Raptors, not necessarily out of ill intent, but because weird things happen. So I tweeted out the big update earlier that Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes are back. Delano Banton and Justin Champagne also available. We'll see if they factor in or not. But Siakam and Barnes are back. And Cleveland Cavaliers fans are taking this as, of course those two guys are back when the Cavs are on the second night of a back-to-back, when their whole team has been sick, and when Jared Allen, Kevin Love, and Lamar Stevens have been ruled out in addition to the other injuries they were already carrying.
Wah.
Yes.
Big time win. Look at what the Raptors have had to deal with.
Exactly.
Look at the teams they've still beat with nobody.
Exactly. And I have to imagine there's like this only all balances out and makes sense if we don't know this because none of them have Twitter because they're on the beach all day. But if Miami Heat fans are also like, well, the Cavs are the team we're afraid of and they always hurt us. And of course their guys are back. Like it needs to round out like that. All of that is to say, Cavs fans, not super confident tonight. Again, second night of a back-to-back. The team has been very ill. Jared Allen and Kevin Love and Lamar Stevens, who is a player, none of those guys available for the Cavs tonight. The Raptors get Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Delano Banton, Justin Champagne back. It sounds like that illness is behind Fred VanVleet a little bit now, which is good. Siakam, by the way, on an undisclosed minutes restriction, to which I say, yeah, right. Mm. It's Nick Nurse.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, we'll see.
We will see. We'll also see what OG Anunoby looks like now that Pascal is back. We're waiting on this emergence, this guy that wanted a bigger role, obviously. Not the way the Raptors intended it to happen, but he got a much bigger role with Pascal out and has scored 20 points in three of the last four games. He's starting to look like there's another step to be had there, Blake.
Yeah, and shocker that, you know, we had to give a guy opportunities, and we being like the royal we here, I'm not a part of the team, obviously. This is why you're patient with it and why you continue to give opportunities and things like that to see if a guy can grow into it and if things can click for him. I don't think that anything OG Anunoby has done without Pascal Siakam has to go away. I don't think that there's like, it's not like the Raptors were running a boatload of isolation plays for OG Anunoby. He was mostly getting his stuff within the flow of the offense. Yeah, a little bit more freedom to attack one-on-one. When OG is able to get 2 feet in the paint, he has been really good lately, and that's something that the Raptors need even with Siakam back. Those things should play off of each other well. It also lets Siakam's return also lets OG get back to the corners just a little bit where the Raptors could really use his shooting because this hasn't been a very good three-point shooting team. Overall, though, there's no reason that OG can't be this guy with Pascal Siakam back. He has a 24.4% usage rate when Siakam's not on the floor this year. That's maybe a little high, but his true shooting percentage is right around 56%. That's where you want it for a guy using up that many possessions. And then when you look at his numbers with Siakam on the floor, true shooting percentage goes up as you'd expect. He has a better player to play off of. They just have to find a middle ground between what his usage was without Siakam and what it is with Siakam, which is about you know, 5 percentage points. So you've got a wiggle room there to get OG more touches. And you can still do things like, hey, maybe your confidence level's a little higher in OG being one of the two guys operating with the bench or something like that, especially if Siakam's minutes actually are down a little bit to start. Which, so, again, hold on. Believe it when I see it.
Does Scotty Barnes also have an unknown minutes restriction, or is it just Pascal Siakam?
Not that I am aware of. Nurse did not mention it for Scotty Barnes. He did mention it for Pascal Siakam.
All right, so the reins are totally off. Here are the numbers before and after the Pascal Siakam injury, because now we can say it's over. We can compare them. They were 5-4 before it. They've been 5-5 since, which is remarkable considering some of the statistics across the board. And I guess some of them are skewed by some big losses to the Thunder during that,
yeah,
that span,
guess,
I guess.
You also had a big loss to the Thunder. You deserve for that to be a thing. Also, like, quietly, I don't mean this to, like, shoot down that the Raptors have been really good despite everything that's gone on. But, like, when we were talking about some of their, like, oh, top 10 on both ends of the floor and stuff like that, they had two, like, outlier blowout wins against the Hawks and Spurs back-to-back that early in the season were, like, really inflating their numbers. So I think it's fair.
But that counts, right? Yes. Yeah, yeah. That totally counts. Their net rating without Pascal Siakam, though, was 23rd. They had a minus net rating in the 10 games without him despite being 5-5. Their offensive rating totally tanked, as you would expect, 22nd at a 109.9. Defensive rating also tanking, going from 6th to 19th.
Mm-hmm.
3-point percentage is the big, big drop, right? They were dead last in the NBA without Pascal Siakam, shooting it at 32%, 30th in the league, despite being 10th in the NBA before he went down with the injury.
And that one there is a good example of how a guy can help your spacing and your shooting without himself being a knockdown three-point shooter. Pascal's shooting 34% on threes this year. That's, I mean, it's helpful for a guy to do that on 4 threes a game, but that's not changing your team's overall three-point percentage as much. It's the fact that Pascal Siakam draws a ton of attention and has become a very, very good passer. It also does things like I mentioned with OG, suddenly instead of having the ball, OG Anunoby, one of your best three-point shooters, is back in the corner a little bit more. You have him a little bit more as a shooter. I'm glad you have all those stats. I don't know who posted them or
that was your boy Kareem.
They're probably wrong then. No, I think, look, the biggest thing you need to know with Pascal Siakam's return is that he is in, like, almost the top spot in the entire league in terms of how good is his team's half court offense with him versus without him. The Raptors on the season are dead last in half court points per possession. They've done all their damage in transition and by winning the possession battle and things like that. They at least have a chance of scoring in the half court when Pascal Siakam's there. Like, almost.
Well, and they're much better on the break with him as well.
And they get out in transition more because he's good defensively and is a good defensive rebounder.
Like, it's almost like he's just really good.
Yeah, he kind of is very, very good. And Fred VanVleet, who missed some of these games, also very good. OG Anunoby, who's now like the team's Iron Man, which is bizarre. Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Two Raptors have appeared in every game this year. OG Anunoby and who else?
OG Anunoby and who else? Wancho?
No, Christian Koloko.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what the injury situation has been like. So the before and afters are really helpful. I think similar to what we've talked about with the Leafs, where, I mean, the Leafs are thriving with all these things. The Raptors just hanging in through all these injuries has been great. They've used 10 different starting lineups. They have 33 missed games between six of their rotation players. And despite being 30th in half court offense, they're above league average on both ends of the floor and in net rating overall. Like, it's pretty good that they've skated by like this, and now they get their best player back and Scotty Barnes, which is also a thing. Siakam, I think everyone was appreciating it in the moment, just how good he'd been and what he was doing. There is also often an element of absence making the heart grow fonder, because you see these on-off splits. You see what this half-court offense looks like without him. Everything gets easier for everyone else on the floor with Siakam back.
It's almost the opposite of the Morgan Riley thing. Because, yeah.
Well, you want to do a little Morgan Riley Ewing theory before we get going here?
I don't know. I mean, it's Morgan Riley and it's TJ Brody, which I would have never anticipated saying the same thing about, because that guy, like, seemingly is the fixer when it comes to defense.
Yeah, I don't think that they're like, I think if you had a big enough sample, this would wash out probably, especially the Brody element of it, because again, I think he's very good. I will say that Morgan Riley's value to this team falls in other areas before his defending in his own zone.
Correct.
And that's that part's not a big surprise. If you want to know where Morgan Riley's missed, what was the power play stat you said earlier?
0 for 10 since he's departed. So yeah, that's an issue.
And that's a guy like he's not everyone's favorite power play quarterback because he doesn't have the big shot, and Bourne's fond of pointing out that sometimes when it comes back to him, he lets the defense reset a little bit when he's kind of navigating at the point. The power play needs.
Yeah, they need to score. They do well to score tonight against the Detroit Red Wings.
And I mentioned earlier, the one problem with this decor, as they're holding up extremely well and playing good defensively, is they have had trouble getting the puck the other way, tilting the ice back. And that's an area where, yeah, sometimes it's a risk here or a gamble there. Morgan Riley's very good at that. So
yes, he is.
That's missed.
No, he's a good player. Yeah, just like I want Alfonso Davies to speak to the media, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs are better with Morgan Riley, but they're holding their own without him. There was a pretty significant baseball transaction today, which we haven't gotten to.
Jose Abreu.
Yeah, a former MVP was acquired by the defending World Series champions, so that seems significant. He's apparently on the verge of signing a 3-year deal. He is aged, about to be 36 years old in January.
Three years, $60 million, by the way, is the report now.
Okay, so almost
Houston Chronicle coming through with the dollar amount there.
Okay, so almost the Hyunjin Ryu deal. It's a year shy of the Hyunjin Ryu deal. He's going to be 36. He had 183 hits this season, but only 15 home runs. Coming off a 30 home run season in 2021, he hits for average at .304. He's right-handed, and he plays first base pretty well. He plays first base well.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking here. So right-handed first baseman with a WRC plus around 135, who has a 97th percentile hard hit rate, but is more of a hitter for average than power these days. Who does that remind you of, Ben?
Yeah.
I'm being facetious, but yeah, Jose Abreu is really good still.
Yeah, he's fine. It does mean that
I love guys who don't strike out.
Yeah, and he doesn't, and he's had some big walk years, and reasonable walk years at least. It's harder to imagine those walks continuing to trend upward if he's only going to hit 15 home runs in a season. Houston also a pretty good ballpark to hit home runs if you're a right-handed hitter, but so is Chicago. Like, really good.
Yeah.
Is like one of the best in all of Major League Baseball.
It's a pretty steep multi-year decline on the slugging side for Abreu. But I don't know. Like, we talked to Eno Saris about this last week when he was on with us, when we were talking about aging profiles of OBP versus slugging. And the thing he pointed out is the thing you're most worried about is a guy who doesn't have great bat to ball skills. So the fact that Abreu has always been in recent years has been a moderate walk guy and has really trimmed his strikeout rate as he ages, you worry a little bit about the power drop off, but that bat to ball skill, that ability to avoid just doing nothing, is maybe a good reason to think he will stick around for a little bit as a 300-ish hitter, even if the power drops off.
Yeah.
$20 million is a lot for that.
And I was going to say, I was doing a lot of looking at the Miguel Cabrera baseball reference page because he made official what we all knew was going to happen. As soon as the Detroit Tigers are no longer obligated to pay him $30+ million, they won't, and no one will, and he'll go off into retirement. And things really, like, it was 33 from Miguel Cabrera. Like, he was still an elite hitter the year before. And then it just all disappeared. And he's been garbage. He's been well below league average. He's been unplayable unless you're paying him $30 million. Then you play him out there as a reminder of days gone by. But,
And some fan service and stuff sure. there. Let him chase some of the records and stuff. And I think, you know, there is some instructive stuff in the Cabrera numbers. You know, one of the early warning signs was that his strikeout rate did tick up a little bit, not significantly. He never, like, to his last game, was never a huge strikeout guy given the era and player type he is. But there was an uptick in strikeout rate. So you want to watch for that. Another thing that came up, and it's something the Astros will have to watch with Jose Abreu. Some of his slide, and again, it's slide is a relative term here. He just didn't hit for as much power. The inability to hit hard stuff for power.
Yeah, but that's getting old, right? As a slugger, that's what, it's bat speed.
Yes.
It's having to cheat on the fastball. And
Josh Donaldson dealt with it all year this year, where 100%. He was out of his shoes a lot of the time because he couldn't catch up to the fastball and had to sit fastball, or he had no chance of getting it. And you know, that led to some ugly swings. It might have been there's no test case. Yeah. Like, there's no, like, oh, what if you just tried to be patient and sat on other stuff to compare it to? But yeah, that'll be what Houston has to watch for, is all those hard hit rates are great. But if you can only do it against soft stuff, then you become an easier guy to hit against.
Yeah.
I
don't know if it means that Yuli Gurriel is now going to retire. He's 38 years old, but yeah, it just means that he's not going to return to the Astros, and not somebody the Blue Jays should concern themselves.
If only he were left-handed.
If only he was also good, but yeah, he's neither, or at least wasn't this past season.
I mean, he's 1 year removed from being the batting champ.
Yeah, but he played 146 games this year and was not good.
Yeah, he was not. He had two. That was a 75 point batting average drop off. I'm not very good at math, apparently.
That's not good, because that's kind of your calling card.
Yeah.
Lastly, before we get the last call, we kind of mentioned Leo Messi kind of in passing in relation to him doing media at the World Cup, and Alfonso Davies not. Part of that might be because he wants to make everybody still interested in him if his team did not advance. Now, they came up with a big win over Mexico, and he scored a spectacular goal because he's still Leo Messi, even at 35. But he's going to be plying his trade in MLS, it sounds like. The biggest contract ever handed out in that league. He's going to go to Inter Miami, a team partly owned by David Beckham, who was previously the biggest name to ever play in that league. Now, it's different because Beckham was not an out-and-out goal scorer, right? Like, Messi still... The primary reason you watch Argentina and Barcelona, like, he scores goals, or PSG, like, he scores goals, and I guess still capable at 35.
You're telling me a reasonably attractive, rich 35-year-old wants to play out his last couple years of being famous in Miami? I'm shocked.
You think Kyle Lowry and Messi are going to...
Oh, I was just saying in general, like...
Yeah.
Like, that's the sweet spot if you're Inter Miami. Like, yeah. That's the drum you got to bang. It's a
100%.
It's a very unfortunate that the Miami Marlins have never been able to get out of their own way long enough to become a free agent destination, either for rich players who want to just chill for a bit, or the Cubanos who have come over to Major League Baseball. It's a missed opportunity. I'm glad Inter's leaning into it. And the Miami Heat do it too, although theirs is more of a, we have all this medical magic that can prolong your career.
Yeah, the Phoenix is like the record holder for medical magic, aren't they?
Yeah, but also the other way too. Phoenix is just a bizarre organization.
Anyways, interesting time to be getting the world's biggest soccer superstar outside of Cristiano Ronaldo when they're moving entirely to Apple TV next season. Their entire rights deal is over streaming with Apple TV, so they got to be pretty pleased about that.
It kind of makes you wonder, are we... I know the MLS salary cap has always been a little opaque when it comes to import players like this. I don't know. Maybe there's like every team has a little cap slot where Apple plays for a chunk of it.
No kidding. Apple Tim Cook, very, very happy when he found out this news, because I'm sure it was news to him. He had no preconceived or premonition that this might be happening. Time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It is a whole new game. Cavaliers and Raptors. And now with all the names being reintroduced, Raptors are favored. Quite heavily, in fact. Minus 182 are the Raptors. Point spread is -5 in favor of the home team. The Leafs at Little Caesars Arena to play the Detroit Red Wings, who are hot on their heels, actually, in the Atlantic Division. They're third in the Atlantic Division.
Remarkably poor possession team, though, for a team playing that well.
So you're saying regression candidate.
Yeah, I think there's a fall coming for Detroit at some point. Although, they've gotten some good goaltending here.
All right. Well, Leafs are favored, as they are in every single game that they will ever play during the regular season. It's just a little minus 143 for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Detroit Red Wings paying plus 125. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. So we get a little bit of a staggered start here. Leafs at 7 o'clock, Raptors at 7:30.
Not enough. I'm going to have to do the PVR Leafs thing.
Yeah. MLSE, if you're listening, get it together. Saturday was awesome. Like, have the Raptors play at 4 o'clock in the afternoon every day.
Okay, relax. Look, I lived in Vancouver before. The 4 o'clock thing is not as fun as you think because you gotta rush to watch. On a Sunday for NFL, perfect. Less so for a weekday game.
All right, I guess. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. It's been the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.